Attention, everyone. Please take your seats and we will begin the meeting. We apparently have a quorum.
Crack that whip.
Jane, would you please call the roll?
Is your microphone on?
No. Anyone here for Ken Abramovich? Okay. Albertson.
Yes, Julie Cassio for Leif Albertson.
Thank you, Julie. Alexiev. Anyone here for Vladimir Alexiev? Bandopadhyay. Anyone here for Sukumar? Bret Hart.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
C.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Someone here for Vincent? Vincent C. Chambers. Anyone attending for Isetta? Chen. Cheng Fu Chen. Anyone attending for Cheng Fu? Cook. Anyone attending for Christine? Davis.
Here.
Fallon.
Here.
Foce Sato. Anyone attending for Javier? George Bettisworth. Anyone attending for Richenda? Okay, Rob Duke is attending for Richenda. Gustafson. Karen Gustafson. Cindy Hardy. Sarah Hardy. Joanne Healy.
Here.
Heaton. Henry. Jensen.
All in a row.
Johnston.
Here.
Jolie. Larden.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Marr.
Here.
McCackern. Diane McCackern. Meyer.
Here.
Nadine.
Here.
Newberry.
Here.
Chung Sang.
Here.
Radenbo.
Present.
Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley. Anyone attending for Peter Webley? Winfrey. Windsor. Anyone attending for Peter Windsor? Yari.
Here.
And Jane. All
right. Thank you, Jane. The minutes were posted online in the middle of last week. Are there any edits or changes to the minute or additions? These are the minutes for our previous meeting, number 190. Seeing none, the minutes are adopted. Are there any changes to today's agenda? Seeing none, the agenda is adopted. The Senate approved two motions in our last meeting, and that those were a motion to approve a new BA degree in secondary education with content area, and a motion to approve establishment of a central online collection of expanded course descriptions. Both of those have been approved by the Chancellor. There are no motions pending, so we have a clear plate. And on to my comments. I have one topic I wanted to mention. This is with reference to the establishment of a central online collection of expanded course descriptions. We have met with Carl Kowalski and others in OIT to talk about how this would be done, the practical side of setting up the structure and the database. They are working on a mock-up during the summer, and that will be rolled out in stages to a core group in the fall and then more broadly to the Faculty Senate during the fall. They have told us they are able to automatically load everything in that template except for the course description, course goals, and learning outcomes. So everything else can be automatically populated from Banner, which is wonderful because it will save a lot of trouble. It also, faculty should be aware, will be a way for us to do error checking on Banner's contents, which we know is not always completely correct. So Banner itself can be corrected by you if you see an error in your course description. So you'll hear more about that in the fall. Any questions on that? All right, I turn this over to our president-elect, David Valentine.
Thanks, Jennifer. Just a couple things to kind of wrap up loose ends from, can everybody hear me all right? Wrap up a couple loose ends from this past year. We've had a couple of efforts that have been ongoing that I want to report to you on. One is the Interdisciplinary Issues Committee that Craig Gerlach has been chairing mostly this spring. They've been developing drafts of their report, which is nearing final form but not yet there. But they have done a lot of work towards identifying interdisciplinary issues that we face, categorizing them, as well as including a number of potential models that we may want to look at with respect to how to address those. Those are models from different universities across the country. I anticipate that we'll get a final report from that committee sometime this month, and I will be ensuring that it gets uploaded to the Faculty Senate website, and it's probably going to be included in the first agenda of the fall Senate. The second ongoing effort that I've been sort of working on has been the learning management system comparison. There's been a pilot project that we've been working with e-learning on that's been run by Carol Gehring and her folks over there. That pilot project is now wrapping up. We're starting to get some initial impressions from instructors in those courses, including some who have indicated that they would prefer to not switch back to the current LMS, which I find interesting. We should have a full report on that by the fall. The other half of that effort has been to set up a focus group. Now, the focus group would be essentially a group of faculty that would be tasked with doing some common things. The problem is it turns out that by the time you add up all the common things, it winds up being a very large list of tasks. So we're looking at splitting up those tasks and having multiple focus groups that might help us with that. So I've been working with Carol Gehring's group on that, and that work will continue into the fall. The last thing that I wanted to do is to abuse my position as president-elect and just give a public shout-out to Faculty Senate President Jennifer Reynolds, who I wanted to acknowledge has been a real pleasure to work with this past year. The amount of work and leadership that she has done behind the scenes, it's not visible to most anybody, has been huge, and I was there to witness some of it. I thought it was rather telling, however, she kept referring to me as the Senate President in Training, and only recently did I put the acronym together, but I really have to acknowledge that she didn't treat me like that at all. She leaves some large shoes to fill, and I want to thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, David. That was very kind, I think. Are there any questions for David? All right. Move on to comments by the provost. Susan Henricks.
I know the chancellor plans to be here and make some remarks, so I won't talk about the things that he'd intended to talk about. First thing I want to say is that the Faculty 180 program is ready for use, at least in a beta testing mode. We'll be sending out a communication about that shortly. We are looking for volunteers to give it a try this spring and feedback to us whether it is working adequately for people's needs. And so I'll be interested to hear from anyone who's really interested in giving it a test flight. If you could let me know but there will also be a general communication making that offer shortly. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the promotion and tenure process. Once again, it was a wonderful experience to read the more than 90 files that came my way for review. There were about 15 in the pre-tenure review category, 35 in the post-tenure review category, and then the remainder in either the promotion to associate professor and tenure decision area or separate tenure decisions or promotion decisions. By and large, these were excellent files showing really impressive performance on the part of our faculty, and consistent with this, most of them were successful. The promotion to associate professor with tenure and individual unitary tenure decisions were all favorable, all of those applications. The promotion to professor decisions were a little more mixed. There were 12 successful applications, two that were not successful, one that was withdrawn. Promotion to research associate professor, those were largely successful. Five were successful and one was withdrawn. I am using the mic. I'm sorry. Maybe it's not on.
No, it is. It is on. It's just not very loud.
Okay. Maybe I'll talk a little more closely to it. Okay. All right. The largely successful applications. The pre-tenure reviews were carefully and thoroughly done, and 12 of those individuals were noted as having satisfactory progress toward a promotion and tenure application in a few years. Three were unsatisfactory at this time, and we hope they'll be able to improve their performance. So that's a quick summary of the results. I'm certainly glad to answer any questions either about Faculty 180 or about the promotion and tenure process.
Anyone? Are there any questions? Seeing none, we will move on and we'll, okay, we will return to the Chancellor's comments when he's able to join us. So, we move on. The next item is adoption of consent agenda. Does anyone wish to remove anything from this consent agenda in order to discuss it? If not, the agenda would be voted on as is. Seeing none, are there any objections to adopting this agenda? Seeing none, the agenda, consent agenda is adopted. And moving right along, we go to old business. And the first item is the resolution to recommend ending automatically university-wide review and post-tenure faculty evaluation. This is the one that we discussed right before the break in our previous meeting. And we tabled it to this meeting in order to allow faculty leadership a chance to discuss it with United Academics. We have done so. We had a good meeting with them in which we all agreed that this is a very desirable move. They are fully behind it. They believe they can help us implement it. And so we now bring it back before you for any further discussion. There are no more concerns about the process of this item. I believe, though, we didn't have a full discussion on the content of it. So I invite anyone to discuss the content of this resolution. This would be a change to the post-tenure review for UNAC members, in which it would remove the step of review by the provost and the campus-wide committee if the unit-level reviews are satisfactory. This is, in a nutshell, what it does. Anyone wish to discuss this?
Honestly, I think it's one of the best ideas that's come into the Senate in ages.
I appreciate that point. all right, let's vote on the resolution then. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Are there any abstentions? Seeing none, the resolution is adopted unanimously. Now, the next two items of old business, B and C, should be considered together, or at least you should be aware that they are closely related. They both relate to the discontinuation of the PhD in mathematics. As you recall, we discussed this last fall and decided to table the motion to agree to the discontinuation of the PhD in mathematics in order to give the department and its faculty a chance to develop a plan to revitalize this program if they were able to do so. And they needed to work with the provost and the dean of natural science and mathematics in order to do that. We have tabled this a second time until the current meeting, and they have now submitted to us a plan for how they will revitalize this PhD program. That plan is contained within the attachment 6 in your agenda, even though right now we are at item B, which is attachment 5. But I draw your attention to attachment 6 because that is relevant to what you might vote on attachment 5. The administrative committee has discussed this, and we support the motion C, the motion to approve continuation of the PhD in mathematics under the conditions outlined in that motion. So the administrative committee recommends that the Senate vote no to the motion in item B and vote yes to the motion in item C. However, it's up to the Senate as to what you choose to do. And I open this for any discussion. Elizabeth.
Sorry, I just wanted a minute to look at B.
Sure.
B again.
Yep. It may might help if I read the text of the motions. It's short. It's the background documents that are long. All right. So the motion that was tabled that we will vote on first says, the UAF Faculty Senate agrees to discontinuation of the PhD degree in mathematics. This motion is unchanged from when we considered it last fall. The other motion that we will take up in a moment says, the UAF Faculty Senate supports continuation of the PhD degree in mathematics on the condition that the Department of Mathematics and Statistics, DMS, submits annual reports to the Faculty Senate and to the Provost demonstrating success in meeting the intent and milestones of its plan, revitalizing the mathematics PhD program at UAF, submitted to the Faculty Senate and attached here. These reports are to be submitted by the program review document deadline established by the Provost. In 2013, this report is due on December 2nd. This condition will continue until the program's next formal program review, currently scheduled for 2015-16. So we're essentially suggesting that you choose between these two options or modify one of these motions as you see fit. Elizabeth.
I am really not that comfortable with the conditions. It doesn't seem fair to me. I feel like they should be able to retain their program without having to meet conditions that no other PhD program, I think, has to meet.
Just a point of order, I would suggest that we talk about the first motion first. That would be the agree to the discontinuation, and then move on to discussion of the second motion.
Yeah, I didn't make that clear. Thank you, David. Yeah, I just wanted you to be aware of the content of the second motion as you're thinking about the first motion. And the first motion is the one that in which the Senate agrees to discontinuation of the PhD degree in mathematics. Is there any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, let's vote on it. All those in favor of this motion, say aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Are there abstentions? All right, the motion is unanimously not agreed to. We move on to the next motion, which is your attachment 6, and this is the one that says the UAF Faculty Senate supports continuation of the PhD degree in mathematics on the condition that, et cetera. Now I open the floor to discussion on this motion. And Elizabeth has noted that she does not agree with including conditions in this motion. Maybe the provost could answer the point, are there other programs that have conditions attached like this one?
There are several programs that were placed on probation as a result of the previous program review. Many of them have the condition of submitting an improved or first time, in a few cases, student learning outcomes assessment plan and or reporting on progress in implementing their student learning outcomes assessment plan. But several of the others were placed on probation in part or wholly because their enrollments in graduates were very low. For most of them, the follow-up will be at the next program review rather than annually. However, this particular program has zero enrollment right now as far as I know and has had very few graduates over the past decade. And compared with other PhD programs at UAF, it is the lowest in terms of enrollment and the very lowest in terms of the total number of graduates in the past decade. So that's the reason for placing these special conditions.
And I might note that the conditions focus on recruiting students and admitting students. The milestones on which they're asked to report have to do with recruiting and admitting students. And then in successive years, administering PhD exams and these various things that you do with your students once they're admitted. So it is the conditions are focused on the number of students and the activity of the program. Any further comments on this? Yes, Elizabeth, go ahead.
I have a lot of thoughts on this, so I apologize. If no one agrees with me, I just want to say them anyway. I feel, okay, to ask a program to do something because they have the lowest number of students, okay, so they increase their number of students. Well, then there's going to be another program. There's always going to be a program with a lowest number of students, right? Okay, zero is a very low number. I understand that, but from my other understanding, math across the country has a low enrollment of PhD students. It's not an incredibly popular thing to get a graduate degree in. We're also talking about math within Alaska, so then the numbers, I imagine, might be even smaller. But let's say in 2 years from now, and let's say next year they don't get a student. Maybe they don't get to continue their program, but the year after that, there's an incredibly bright student somewhere in Alaska who wants a PhD in math. You're talking about eliminating a program because there's no direct need now, but that's saying there's never going to be a need either. And it just seems like getting rid of it is more harmful than letting it continue. And I had one other thought, but I forgot. Oh, yeah. I feel like it also might force the hand of admitting students who aren't great students, pushing them through the program when they're not great students, only because they have to show numbers in order to continue the program.
Can I just make an information point here? The fact that they're asked to report on milestones, if they don't meet those milestones, they are not automatically ended. It is intended as a matter of checking and making the process visible, if you will. But I take your second point on quality of admissions under pressure. Yes, Cecile? Oh, okay, Franz.
I see the I actually like the sort of requirement, quote unquote, of reporting, and I see it actually as a positive thing for the department, because first of all, I think it keeps it on the front of their minds that this is something that they are supposed to focus on in the next few years. And also it gives them the chance on a year-to-year basis to explain why they may have not been able to recruit N students that they promised to do. They can say, we've tried, we've done these things, and it didn't work out. But they can show activity. And what it avoids, I think, to some degree, is that in 3 years from now, when the next review of the program happens, that we are exactly at the same spot as we are now, that there is no enrollment and there's no direct proof available of activity. And then this question will be raised again. And at least then there's a paper trail available that says, okay, these people have done these and these things and they've really tried. And also in the process, it gives the faculty senate, the dean, a chance to intervene because there is documentation available. So I think in the end, I think the effort for doing this is fairly low, and I think in the end it more acts as a protection for the department rather than a punishment.
Cecile?
Okay. Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. From an institutional perspective, I think it's hard to defend the argument that a program should stay open because there might be a single talented student interested at some point. So I think that, again, from an institutional perspective, we have to think, is there really a need in the state for a particular program? So right now, the department has the opportunity to show that there is. And it's, you know, it's never just the faculty or just the students. It's always kind of the synergy of both. So are there enough energetic, interested faculty who want to recruit students and mentor students, and are there enough students who want to take advantage of that opportunity? So I think this is a good way of testing that and documenting that.
David.
Again, I guess I'm a little pedantic, but the motion that we're talking about here is to support the continuation. And the discussion that we have right now is essentially on the condition part. The Robert's Rules of Order inside me, the homunculus inside me that is all wrapped up about that, says that that really should be offered as an amendment, that is to delete the condition. And so we discussed the amendment and then vote on the amendment and then go back to the original motion.
Yeah, so let me clarify the order of events here. If I were, or any of us was to vote no on this motion because of the conditions, what would happen next?
We essentially go back into this into some sort of a limbo. So that's why I'm kind of suggesting that we talk about that as an amendment, that is, remove the condition. Have the amendment be to remove the condition, so just delete everything after mathematics and attachment 6, okay? That would be the amendment. And we can vote up or down on the amendment and then vote up or down on the whatever the motion results from that.
Do we actually have a motion on the floor?
Yes, we do. It is number C in your agenda.
I know that. But
okay.
I didn't hear anybody move that.
Right. David was just talking about a possible path forward, which would involve an amendment to the motion. Does anyone have a comment?
Has anyone seconded that amendment?
No one has made an amendment. Yeah. Jane.
I'd like to ask Margaret what she thinks about. I think I'm going to actually defer it to Elizabeth.
Yes. Yes, since Margaret invites you, please come up.
You're invited.
This is it. So that's on. Okay. Goodness. Is that about the right distance? Okay. So I have to say, I'll speak personally and collectively. Probably personally, I'm completely on board with Elizabeth, but collectively on the part of DMS, I don't think an annual reporting is particularly onerous, and so I think that's fine. 3 years, we have another review. I would say one thing I do personally really care about is quality over quantity, and I really want that to be an issue long term. Our numbers in math, remember, are down because we eliminated admissions to the PhD program. You had to get a master's first. So we had two students who were just stranded with this discontinuation. So there, you know, there's other details, I think, but they do not need to be discussed now. In general, I think an annual reporting is not onerous. And as suggested over there, it could be actually a good thing to document what's going on. Yep. And I can take questions, too.
Thank you.
Anyone wish to address questions to Elizabeth or Margaret or make additional comments? I believe we are headed to voting on the motion. All right. All those in favor of this motion as it stands before you, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
One nay. Any abstentions? Thank you. The motion is adopted. I'm pleased to see we came to a resolution on that issue. All right. Now we move on to comments by the Chancellor. Chancellor Rogers.
Thank you. Good to see everyone here as we come toward the end of the semester. Thanks for all that you've done to make it a successful semester. Looking forward to commencement next weekend. I want to congratulate those members of the Senate that were promoted or received tenure this year. As I've said to the Senate in prior years, that decision is a $1 to $2 million decision by the university to say these people are worth it. The tenure decision is one that commits us for a long period of time to pay for a faculty member. There were some spectacular files this year, and I want to just really thank you for all you've done to support the students and for some of the research and creative scholarly activity and extension that's done by faculty members. I wish you all had the time to read the everyone's self-report. You really get a sense of the breadth and depth of work that's being done here, and it's pretty exciting. And when you see these notices from time to time about an individual and think that's pretty neat, but when you sort of look at an individual's complete body of work over a 4 to 7 year period, you really get a sense of again the what a great institution this is with a variety of skills and disciplines. Tonight we'll honor three with the Usabelli Awards. I hope as many of you can come as possible. It's really neat that we have a private individual who's supported faculty to the extent of making those significant awards. And I think it's just one additional way to recognize the strength of this institution. I want to talk a little bit about budget. Obviously, since our last meeting, the legislature completed its work. We didn't get everything we wanted on either the operating or the capital budget side. We do have enough on the capital budget to be moving forward, as the legislature asked us to move forward with the engineering building construction. Combined heat and power will be continuing work on the design and come in next year with a request for the rest of the design funds for combined heat and power. We anticipate we've filed a permit modification on that. We expect public comment period to be in the fall, September-October time frame, potentially permitting as early as December of next year. Construction on a sort of fastest track is probably summer of 2016, so we're a ways away on getting combined heat and power, and we'll continue to sort of baby along the current plant to make sure that we keep buildings warm and lights on. On the operating budget side, as I reported to you, we pretty much knew the outlines last month. The legislature funded half of the pay raise money, a little bit of money toward other fixed cost increases, and just a couple of new program amounts. That's left us somewhat short for the coming year, somewhere in the order of about $8 million worth of total costs that we'll have to absorb, given the sort of perfect storm of a modest state increase, federal spending at best level, and the smallest tuition increase in over a decade. So as we did a first memo out last week on the basic outline of the steps we're taking to live within that budget. Unlike prior years, we're not going to do a general across-the-board pullback from all units. We are going to each department will have to come up with the funds itself to cover the portion of the pay raise money that is not covered by legislative appropriation. Different departments will address that in different ways. We have a little bit of relief, as do employees, on the health care side with health care rates not going up for employees and some savings over what we anticipated would be the university costs. We're continuing to push energy cost savings and leasing savings. We're going to be able to move out of a little bit of our leased space. That will bring down some of the central costs for leasing outside space, a net budget savings. For all staff positions that come vacant in the next year, we're going to have a required 90-day vacancy on all the Fund 1 staff positions that come vacant and essentially use those savings as a way of achieving part of our budget savings. That's not going to apply to faculty positions, although the provost and vice chancellor research will continue to review any new hire, faculty hires, when the search goes forward. And then over the course of the next fiscal year, we expect some relatively small vertical cuts in all vice chancellor areas. Those will need to go through a review process with either the Planning and Budget Committee or some, if any, involve academic departments, obviously, with the Faculty Senate. We're just now starting to think about next year's budget process. The Board of Regents will be approving their guidelines for the budget at the June meeting, which is here in Fairbanks. I anticipate a very modest legislative request. The biggest decision will be the tuition decision that will be made next September for September of 14. And the President is still considering options on what tuition may be for the fall of 14. One issue that we continue to get pushed on by others is the question of massive open online courses. A lot of public policy leaders think that's a panacea to solve all problems in higher education. I'm not one of those. I'm a real skeptic that while I think there may be some advantage in extending learning in terms of providing a college education, I don't think that's the way to go. And I think particularly for a relatively small institution like ours that can't participate in any of the large ones, I don't see a path forward that makes sense for UAF. We are looking at, within the University of the Arctic, there's a proposal to do a climate change with kind of an Arctic focus online course, mostly to try to extend knowledge about the Arctic and about climate change. And so I will be talking with a group of UAF faculty about what role we might play within that as one of the leading institutions on both the Arctic and on climate change. Leadership in that would likely to be the University of Alberta, not us. And I don't see that as being a for-credit opportunity, but really an opportunity to get knowledge out and for us to learn a little bit about what it takes. It's not an inexpensive process to take on doing that. We are also looking at whether we can assist in the coverage of high school math in rural Alaska, whether there's any opportunity to promote math and science disciplines at all at the high school level, that we can provide any instructional design assistance that would help get us more prepared students coming in. Any faculty who are interested in either of those areas, let me know. We'd be happy try to connect you with those who are working on those issues. I do expect us to continue to be pushed by at the state level, potentially the region's level, and to the extent that we are, we may need to take further steps in the future. I think that sort of our taking a very measured look is the right approach, and we'll continue to maintain that. Would appreciate other thoughts on that area in the future. A lot of activities for the summer. We kicked off summer sessions last night with a Judy Collins concert, and again with a guarantee there will be a summer this year. It's nice to see that weather's finally changing. And with that, I'll handle any questions people may have.
Floor is open to questions. Yes, Debu.
Thank you, Chancellor Rogers, for this detailed report. I have two questions mainly. One is, you mentioned that there was a half of the pay raises that were extended by the state. Didn't the other half come from the University Receipt Authority?
Yes, yes and no. The other half comes from Receipt Authority. We have the authority to go find the money.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I just wanted to make clear because this, when you say half was extended, it didn't, you know, didn't jive well. Anyway, thanks. The other one I have is about the deficit amount that you mentioned. I guess you mentioned a deficit amount, but I didn't catch it.
And the amount we're looking to try to deal with is in the $7 to $9 million range. I think I said eight. It really depends on what happens with federal grants and contracts and with enrollments. Heavily dependent on those two as to exactly what that number is, and that's why we're looking at a range.
And may I just make a final comment? This is not a question, really. I really appreciate UAF taking the lead on covering high school math preparation for students and other stuff. Okay. And I don't know. I'm not speaking. I'm probably, this is my own idea, but other faculty may comment. It will be a great idea to actually take faculty that are working on developmental math field, form a committee, and brainstorm a little bit on this one so that we can effectively retain or recruit and retain these students for the future, because STEM education is becoming a real big thing. Okay?
Great.
So instead of MOOCs, we move into this to earn some revenue. And that will help also in more student recruitment. And I would really appreciate seeing some efforts in student recruitment so that our tuitions are offset by those numbers. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, thank you, Chancellor Rogers. Now we move on to new business. This will be the motion to approve a new minor in dispute resolution submitted by Curricular Affairs Committee. This is your attachment 7. Reiner, would you speak to this?
We think it's a good idea. We think it's well supported. We think it's got some very interesting classes. We urge you to support it.
Okay, and I will note that the motion also states this minor would be housed in the Justice Department in CLA. Would you like to state anything?
The college athletic.
Rob Duke from Justice Department. Mike Deku, our chair, is also here. This is a very new field for Alaska, but it's a broad field in the lower 48, and we think it's going to become very influential here with a multi-door courthouse model. Instead of just coming and going to a trial for either a civil or a criminal thing, we think that we're going to see more and more call for mediation, arbitration, and our program is well-suited. We will be the only degree program in the United States that houses an ADR program in a Justice Department, but we think that's unique. And so we appreciate your support if you can see your way to that. Thank you.
Any further comments on this? All right, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. And the next motion, number B under new business, is a motion to discontinue the minor in leadership and civic engagement. And this is also submitted by Curricular Affairs.
Nobody really likes the idea of making programs go away, but this one simply doesn't have students and it doesn't have support. And basically the person in charge of it asked us very sweetly to get rid of it. We anticipate a different leadership minor emerging next year in a different program that stands a good chance of succeeding. And this will essentially clear the way for that.
Any questions or comments? All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? And this motion carries unanimously. Moving right along, under new business item C, the motion to approve the Fisheries Division Unit Criteria, submitted by Unit Criteria Committee. Karen, would you explain this?
Yep. So the fishery, the differences between this latest criteria, they just had their criteria approved a couple years ago. They added requirements for faculty with joint appointments in specific areas, so specific numbers for graduate students. They made some other more minor changes, but that's the major one, is those new numbers. Any questions?
There any comments or questions on these new criteria? I thank the Unit Criteria Committee for interacting with Fisheries Division to get a good proposal here. If there is no discussion, we will move on to vote. All those in favor of this motion, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. I've got to keep up with you people. And we are up to the break. We're running 10 minutes ahead, but let's go ahead and take a break. We will resume at 2 o'clock, 10 minutes from now. Thank you.
There are no cookies over there.
It's a lie. Cookies, coffee, water, help yourselves. Attention, everyone. Please take your seats. We have had an 11-minute break, so we're ready to go. All right, resume the meeting. We are still on new business. We're now on item D, and this is a motion to amend the grading policy for C-minus, submitted by Curricular Affairs Committee. Reiner, I think you could explain this one quickly.
I screwed up a little bit when we voted on this one. It was intended for all undergraduate classes and degree programs, and foolishly, the wording that was submitted was baccalaureate. So by changing the wording slightly, it'll apply to all undergraduate degrees and degree programs. I urge you to make this change, please. And help me cover my butt.
We all missed this. Are there any comments or questions? Does anyone object to this? All right, let's vote on the motion. Oh, sorry, Artur.
If I could make a comment, Jennifer.
Yes, go ahead.
So the C minus, as it stands, would be good for a passing grade, right? Satisfactory for any undergraduate courses. And it will give someone 1.7 which is less than 2.0 for someone to be in a good standing. So someone can get all C minus, it is all acceptable, but at the end of the semester, he or she would be putting on probation because it does not have 2.0.
Yeah, the
I really don't see how that's going to work out. So are we going to make the probation as 1.7 or keep it as it is at 2.0?
These really are two different issues, one of which is whether taking a course is going to count towards satisfying the requirements for one's degree program. The other issue is, are you really doing well enough that we should pat you on the head and say, fine, or are you doing poorly enough that we should say, you know, let's make this better? The whole point of probation is really to alert the student and the student's advisor that changes are needed. And that's a completely different issue from whether for any individual course a C minus is a satisfactory grade to indicate the person has learned enough from the material.
But if I could respond, Reiner, it would be top sell for the student to tell him that, hey, you passed all the courses, great, but guess what? You'll be on probation because you don't have 2.0.
That's right. And probation is just that. It's probation. It's not you're done, you're out of here, you're dead. Any of that, we need to change something.
Okay, I note, please, that this motion has already been approved for baccalaureate programs. In effect, the motion before us now would broaden this to associate degrees and other undergraduate level degrees that are not baccalaureate degrees. So it's already in place for the baccalaureate, and we have given departments and programs a chance to retain the minimum grade of C if they wish. That has gone out to all departments, and many have responded. So please, let's focus attention on whether this should be expanded to other undergraduate programs. Any further comments or questions on this? Yes.
Yes, I think that's another thing that we probably should keep in mind, that we always are striving to increase our standard and make more rigid to get into UF. Currently it is 2. Now we are lowering it down to 1.7. So I believe it's going in the backward. And the other problem it could bring in the future, that if we decide to go back again to A, B, and C, not plus and minuses, which we had before, and then we have to change this again to another something from C minus to C. So I think it is probably better to stick to a numerical thing, call it 1.7, call it 2.0, call it 2.2, and that way you can avoid all those consequences.
Anyone else? Yes, go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, I think this brings a lot of the certificate and the associate degrees up to what the baccalaureate is going. So I think this is a good motion.
Anyone else? All right, let's vote on this motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Any abstentions? And Ator, as a point of order, I must ask, are you sitting in for someone on the...
Mark Condi.
Okay. Thank you. All right, the next item of new business is a resolution to recommend addition to general education requirements. This is submitted by the Curricular Affairs Committee. This is your attachment 11. And it states, the UAF Faculty Senate recommends that the current UA System Regulation Concerning General Education Requirements, GER, for baccalaureate degrees be modified to allow for 2 5-credit courses in a single non-English language to count toward fulfilling any 6 of the 15 credits required for the Social Sciences, Humanities, Arts section of the GER.
We've been doing this for decades. probably in violation of the regulations. We've been avoiding this with the don't ask, don't tell philosophy, I think. Frankly, most of us are terrified of the notion of trying to get something changed in the Board of Regents because it will be a time-consuming and arduous process that Dave will have to spearhead, at least on our part. But what the heck? It really would be useful to put us in compliance with the Board of Regents regulations, or if not, the Board of Regents reject this, then that we change our policies to really do match them. I urge you to move this resolution forward.
And actually, the good news is that we don't actually have to have the Board of Regents approve this. This can be approved by the President, since it's a system reg.
Sir?
I think in the past we did it with the foreign language and also the American Sign Language. So my question is just for clarification, are we still going to include American Sign Language to do the same thing? Or would it be just like any other non-English foreign language?
Well, is there anyone who would argue that sign language is not a non-English language?
It is an English language. The universe.
Okay. That may be out of the scope of this discussion. Yes, Debu.
I'm not a senator, but I think this is an excellent resolution. Okay, because we are going to retain languages by this method, and we will retain faculty that are going to bring value to the university. That's my personal opinion.
Anyone else wish to comment on this? Yes, Julie.
I guess. To get back to the sign language question, are we saying that this wouldn't include sign language?
We're not actually deciding today whether sign language would qualify under this, okay. And I'm not sure we need to get into that today, although we can if the Senate wishes to. Essentially, we are talking about codifying a current practice or a longstanding practice. That's the intent of this motion.
I just wouldn't want to cut something out that maybe ought to be included, and then we'd have to do it again.
Reiner, do you or Libby know whether sign language has been included or excluded in the past?
It is included, but it's a little weird because it doesn't consist of 5-credit classes.
Thank you.
If I could, it used to be either 2 semesters of foreign language or 3 semesters of American Sign Language.
Unfortunately, then the semesters need to be specified because there are both 3-credit one-semester courses and 5-credit one-semester courses. And the intention has been that it's going to be a total of, well, we could say a total of 9 or 10 credit, perhaps. That would still be a little messy. I guess part of the reason for leaving out the whole American Sign Language thing here was because it introduces a lot of complications into the language.
All right. I would point out the Chancellor has just shown me that the Department of Foreign Languages includes American Sign Language as a language. No?
Okay, they list it.
They list it. Yes, they do.
Not into
I'm sorry, I've said this incorrectly. Would you please say it, just to clarify it?
So the Department of Foreign Language website speaks of sign language as one of the languages that we offer, but it's offered through the Community and Technical College.
Thank you. Yep, and the motion specifies 5 credits.
Yeah, could we just amend the...
May I recommend that if we're talking about making amendments to this, that perhaps it should be sent back to committee and reconsidered, because it seems there may be permutations that hadn't been considered. Yes, Orion.
So I have a really disturbing permutation, which is I teach a course called assembly language, and we also teach a course called programming languages. So if you just say, and they are non-English languages, and we have some very creative students, I'm sure would argue that point.
Are they 5-credit courses?
They are 3-credit courses.
All right, so further discussion on this?
The intention is that we make our present policy with regards to non-English languages and the core officially approved at the Board of Regents regulation level.
Mm-hmm.
There ought to be some way we can say that.
And it should be simple to do that if you just adopt the language that UAF has been using. And I assume that's what the committee has done. Is that correct? Does anybody know?
Not exactly, because it really does include the words American Sign Language. I suppose tabling is probably the best thing to do. Well,
do you wish to comment?
I was just wondering, that this is a resolution rather than a motion. Is the verbiage as critical as it is for a motion? I mean,
you're right, it's not. Although it would be, I think, desirable to get it to say what the Senate actually wishes. If we're going to talk about the details, it seems better that we decide them rather than having them decided farther down the line. Cecile, go ahead.
I would suggest taking that back to the committee and just kind of thinking through some of those other scenarios and bringing it back.
Any other comments? Do we have a motion to do that, or do you wish to vote on the motion as is?
I move to table it.
Let's table it.
Okay, so we have a motion. Was that a second, Rainer?
Yeah.
All right. All those in favor of tabling this motion, say aye.
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 This resolution. All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions?
Nay.
One abstention. All right, the resolution is tabled. And will be sent back to the Curricular Affairs Committee for further consideration. All right. And the final item of new business is a motion to approve a new graduate certificate in science teaching and outreach. This is submitted by the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee. And Donnie, where's Donnie? Oh, here she is. You're moving. All right. So Donnie will explain this.
Okay, so as Rainer would say, this is a good program, and I urge you to vote for it. The idea here is to establish a graduate certificate in science teaching and outreach for a bunch of courses which already sort of exist, mostly piecemeal, but will help to provide an emphasis for the graduate students on improving their instructional abilities. And it will link to community engagement, and it will allow them to receive a certificate which will improve their job worthiness as they go out. So it's restricted to students that are already enrolled in existing programs in science and in natural sciences, so it's not a new program in that sense. It's just going to give them a tangible certificate that they can use to improve their marketability for doing things that one would hope they'd be motivated to do anyway, but giving them that little extra boost.
Any questions or discussion on this? Yes, Hunter?
I just wanted to know where this program will be housed, what other departments will be involved, and where the finance is going to come, or if there is no need for further resources.
Okay, I believe many of those are described in the motion. So the motion states, the UAF Faculty Senate moves to approve a new graduate certificate in science teaching and outreach housed in the College of Natural Science and Mathematics. And Donnie, do you want to talk about the finances?
It includes, right now, folks who are interested in participating include biology, chemistry, and physics department. They are all existing faculty, so their salaries are already covered. It's a rather modest addition to their workloads, and the which they are all in favor of taking on. And the administrative costs are very small because the existing administrator for the Department of Biology and Wildlife will administer the program, which is estimated to be less than 0.05 of an FTE.
Okay. Other comments? All right, let's vote on this motion. All those in favor of approving this certificate, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? One abstention. The motion is approved. Thank you, Donnie.
You're welcome.
Uh-oh.
But. Oh.
All right, and now we move on to discussion items. And the first is the executive summary of the Electronic Course Evaluation Project. This was run through the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee, and the chair is Franz Meyer. Franz, will you please present this?
Yes. So I know it's late, and it's already the last meeting of the year, but still I want you to get all interested and riled up about this, because I think this is an important topic. Reiner would say, this is important stuff. So what I want to do in a few minutes is I want to just give you a background of where this comes from. I've told you this before, but if your memory is as good as mine, then you probably forgot. And I want to tell you a little bit what we have done and what our main findings were and what we are planning to do next, or what we are recommending to be done next. So as I've mentioned that before in that round, is that in October last year, the Faculty Development, Assessment, and Improvement Committee, which I'm chairing, together with Dr. Eric Madsen, who is sitting here in the back also, were entrusted by the Senate to look into the current state of the art of electronic course evaluation systems and analyze them to sort of assess their fit and their applicability to UAM. That sort of was the goal that we were after. And initially we focused on that very much verbatim, and we started out summarizing existing course evaluation systems out there. We sort of down-selected them and then scheduled one-hour demos with 12 of those vendors to sort of assess what their capabilities are and how they match with UAF needs. The demos were widely announced to faculty, students, and staff in order to get broad participation, broad in the sense of covering all the different groups that are dealing with course evaluation. And over the weeks, we got about a core group of 9 to 10 evaluators, and the core group are the people that attended most of the demos. And it was a good setup because we had faculty from both sort of on-campus and rural colleges. We also had representation from the provost office, as well as from OIT. And OIT representation was very valuable for all the technical components of the different software tools, and also the security-related aspects of them. And we also had occasional student participation. So this is sort of what we did. We formulated a large list of evaluation criteria that we used to sort of make sure that we got a good sense of what these systems could do and how they fit to UAF. And this list was published to you a month ago in the last Faculty Senate meeting, and I think found general approval from all of you. And then based on this list, we started analyzing systems in December and had the last demo at the end of April. And just wanted to also take this moment to thank all of the people that have attended any of those demos. We really appreciated their efforts and the contribution and the comments they made and all the time they invested into the study. So the main finding, one of the first findings that came up really right at the beginning, is that course evaluation technology, so sort of the technical means that we use to assess a class, is really just a part of the whole puzzle. It's one piece of the overall evaluation process at the university. And we realized that we really have a hard time analyzing technology or selecting technology if we don't consider also the main goal of course evaluation. So what do we want this tool to achieve for us? Also, we have to analyze which kind of benchmarks do we want to use to assess faculty. So do we want to compare them to themselves over time? Do we have any other standards that we want to use? And also, which indicators we want to use to assess whether course evaluation is working for us? You know, is it response rate? Is it the quality of responses? How do we find out whether the system we have in place is actually a useful and working system? So there's a larger discussion that has to be led around the technology itself, and that's one of the main findings that we had in our report. So the deliverables of our work is essentially a larger scale report that an executive summary of the report is attached to the documents you have in your hands, and the documents also have a link to the full report. The full report is housed at the Faculty Senate webpage. And rather than being merely a report that addresses course evaluation technology, the report is more of a guideline in the end that sort of tells you how a process or proposes a process to go through when one wants to reevaluate its course evaluation approach. So it's a step-by-step procedure of discussions that we think needs to be had in order to evaluate an existing procedure or maybe move to a different procedure. And so the main findings on the report, you have a list, I think, of nine main recommendations that we came up with. And the first one is that before deciding upon changes of evaluation technology, I think we first need to have a discussion on campus about to get a clear understanding of what the main purpose of course evaluation should be at UAF. I think there is a disconnect between what people want course evaluation to do and what the current system is actually capable of doing and how it's implemented at this moment. And many of you may not realize that there is a disconnect. I think there needs to be a discussion on that. It is also very important, and that's actually not in the summary you have, that faculty are involved in this process, that faculty have a say in every step of this analysis. Because if we change the system, it is paramount that the faculty in the classroom are supporting the new system that is adopted. I think without faculty support, every new system will fail. So I think it's important, and not just saying that because I'm faculty myself, but I think it's important that faculty are involved. Another finding we got, especially from talking to our colleagues at UAA and UAS, is that it is important that when should we change course evaluation strategy, that we do this in a step-by-step approach, and we avoid changing both technology and the question set we're using at the same time. It was told from both universities told us that they consider that was a mistake that they made, is changing both the technology and the question set at the same time. Also, we came up with a list, if you look through the report, of benefits of electronic evaluation systems and in paper-based systems. Both of them have the advantages and disadvantages. And reading through those is important because it's eye-opening and it will help in the discussion of what's favorable for UAF. And one of the talking points about electronic systems is response rate. A lot of people have heard that electronic systems don't provide high response rates. And while this is true, that many universities have had this experience, there are also universities that have not had this experience of dropping response rates. And it's also important to note that a response rate itself is not the only indicator that determines the quality of the responses. In the end, you want an unbiased assessment of the course, and there's more to it than just the number of responses. It's also the quality of response that comes out of the student. So there are more indicators than just response rates. And it is important that even an electronic system can produce satisfactory response rates under certain conditions that we list. If students are incentivized, there are lots of theories out there and studies on how to incentivize students to participate in the survey. If faculty and administration actively support evaluation and the technology in the classroom, if students are informed of the importance of this for them, if students are made aware that they have a stake in the game, essentially, and if reminders are sent out regularly to both faculty and students that course evaluation time comes up and they have to participate. So if you read through the report, especially Section 3, there's a lot of discussion about how course evaluation response rates can be improved independent of system, really, whether you have a on-paper or an online system, which steps you can take. It's also, let's see here. So then about the technology itself, we've done a large review and we found out, surprisingly, that the different technologies that are out there are different in many, many different aspects. So there's a wide variety of different technologies out there that are serving very different needs and have very different qualities and components to them. So this makes it the more important to have a clear understanding of what we want the system to do. Because certain systems will not be able to, will not respond well or will not be very useful for promotion and tenure processes, but would be very useful for looking at class improvement or assessing student learning outcomes. So there's a strong disparity between different systems, and they have different foci. So it's important for us to understand what we want to select the right system for us, if we want to go that route anyway. In terms of what we want to do next and what we recommend, I don't want to make this too long, for the next steps is we recommend that there should be a discussion started, maybe led by members of the Faculty Senate, on the goals of course evaluation at UAF, to get a consensus of what we want course evaluation to do at UAF. I think that currently there's strong evidence that we're using course evaluation predominantly for the promotion and tenure process. And while there is a component that points towards improving of classes, it's a secondary goal. If you look, we have those two systems, the sort of open answer type system and the checkmark system. But even if you read through the open answer questions, the focus of these questions is still towards faculty tenure and promotion and not predominantly towards improvement of classes and learning outcomes. And this is interesting because it's sort of contradicting many of the research that is out there that is saying that faculty and administration in the U.S. actually think that class improvement and student learning outcomes should be the most important goal of course evaluation. This is not how it's implemented here. So if you think that it's important, more important for us, or is equally important for us to try to make classes better, try to make sure that our students learn what they're supposed to learn, then we should have this discussion and redesign what course evaluation should be doing for us. So that's one of the things that we should start with. At the same time, what we will do, when I say we, is the FDAI committee and Dr. Eric Mattson, is we will continue the research of existing course evaluation technology. We have selected a set of four systems that are very promising, that are very good match to UAF needs, and we will analyze them more in the fall. And we are not entirely sure yet what we want to do. There's discussions about doing town hall meetings where we have larger scale demos for those. But what's important for us is that you understand that this is important. Should UAF change its strategy, it will affect all of us. And it may affect us in a good way, but it also may affect us in a way we don't like. So I think if you have any kind of opinion on this, please make your voice heard. Come to those demos. If you're a critic of electronic systems, please come to those demos, because then you may be convinced otherwise. If not, that is your chance to ask the critical questions, to come up with your critical comments. Please participate in this, especially if you are untenured or if you have colleagues that are untenured that are very strongly dependent potentially on these systems. Please come and participate in this to make sure that the right decision is made here. So we'll continue the research in the fall. We'll advertise the steps that will be made in the fall starting just before the fall semester begins. So please watch out for those emails, and please be part of this discussion. In the vein of trying to make this work for us and trying to make course evaluation better. Even if we don't change the system, I think there are still ways of making the system work better for us, the system we have right now. So that's what I wanted to say.
Thank all right. So questions. Cecile.
Well, first of all, I really want to applaud Flens and the other members of the committee. That is a huge amount of work they did, and I just really support the recommendations they came up with. As a social scientist, I know how powerful the phrasing of a question is, and you know what you ask in many ways dictates what you get as an answer. Just to give you a very simple example, one year I administered to one of my courses two instruments. One was the form that we use, both the bubble form and the open questions. And then I had my own questions that I administered on Blackboard anonymously. But the questions I asked had more to do with how students made use of the materials I provided and how students made use of the assignments and the readings and what they found most helpful and that kind of thing. And in reading through the comments, I thought I had asked two completely separate groups of people. I mean, there was no similarity in how students responded to the questions that focused more on their involvement with the material in the course and the questions that had more to do with what I did or didn't do. So that's just kind of anecdotal support for Frantz saying we have to really look at the questions that each instrument asks and how those questions are asked, and for us to be sure about what we want answers to.
Yes, Mike?
I'm just curious. I appreciate the conversation here today. And I was just curious, in the course of what you've been looking at, has the conversation come up about doing mid-course evaluations? Because to me, that's what I've done. And to me, that's much more effective in learning how the students are learning rather than finding out 4 months later what they thought of the course. So I get, to me, that's much more valuable, and I would think that would be to the point that you made about what are we doing this for. And I when I tell the students, please fill out these evaluations, you know, to give feedback on how the course worked for you or what. But to me, the mid-course one is, that's the one where I get some value out of it.
Yes, so this did come up, and to some degree, this is an advantage of these electronic systems because they have a much higher flexibility into what you want to assess and when you want to assess that. But this came up in several contexts, actually. One of them is, you know, as one additional application of course evaluation systems to do midterm evaluation. But it also came up in terms of incentivizing students. Because if you do midterm evaluation and you respond to those evaluations, it shows the student that their feedback is heard and their feedback is important. And in the end, I think the person at UAA put it nicely, saying students work for bribes, students work for outcomes. If you can believably tell a student that this is something that they benefit from, they will be much more inclined to A, participate in the surveys, and B, participate in a valuable way. There's one way of people just filling out a form because they have to fill out a form and saying like five to everything, and in contrast to having them, you know, invest some real time into the survey and have them think about what they say. So it was pointed out as an advantage for student quality and quantity of student feedback, and as a flexibility of systems that they provide. So all of these systems have the opportunity of doing midterm reviews.
Azur, go ahead.
Just, I think it's an honest effort and a step in the right direction. And as we all try to improve our instructional capacity, improve it, and we all know that the receiving end, these students are concerned. So my question is, how much feedback or any involvement we have for this project coming from these students?
Thank you for asking that, because I forgot that in my talking points. I forgot to say it. We have invited students all along through the process, but we'll more actively approach all the student bodies down the road, because we are convinced that students are very important in that process. So we'll make sure that, and Dr. Madsen will make sure that students, staff, administration, and faculty are all equally involved in that decision. And just let me repeat one more point. This discussion, I think, should be led independent on whether or not we change the system. This first discussion about what do we want it to do is useful and valuable, even if we decide to just stick with what we have. But at least we remind ourselves what the system is doing right now and whether or not it's aligned with what we want to do. We might want to stick with a paper format but change the questions. So there's a huge amount of options that are open. But I think it is very important that we are clear amongst ourselves what do we want and match that up with what we have. And then we can take the next step. And for this first step, I think it's important for everybody to be heard.
Margaret. First of all, I'm going to admit that I've kind of sort of dropped the ball on this one as probably the only statistician in the room. I'm probably going to have a little bit of a different perspective on some of what it is that you're talking about. So I kind of want my name on your mailing list with important in caps on it. But I have to admit that I'm definitely going to have some concerns about the response rate. Quite frankly, if you have a response rate that's down around 20% or something like that, if it's actually really and truly representative of the population, and if this is something you're going to be basing promotion and tenure decisions on, I want it to be an unbiased sample. And so my concern whenever people talk about these sorts of systems is I don't want it to be like the www.rateyourprofessor.com thing where either you hate the guy or you love the guy, and there's just sort of people on both ends of the spectrum. So keep me on your mailing list.
Yes.
All caps.
All right. Are there any other urgent comments? We should move on. We have another discussion item. Does anyone object to that and wish to say something first?
Just one more word.
Yes, go ahead, Franz.
Please read the report and send me an email, send Eric Madsen an email if there's something you don't like or if you have any suggestions.
Okay, thank you very much. And this will be back in the Senate in the fall. All right, so we move on to our second discussion item. This is a report from the General Education Revitalization Committee. Is Jonathan Rosenberg here?
Yes.
Yes? Great, please. Jonathan, find a microphone. Can you use the one up here in front?
Yep.
Thank you. I won't take much time because you have our executive summary in the minutes, and time would probably be better used for questions and comments. I also want to refer you to Alex Fitz and Cindy Hardy, who are also members of GERC, our unfortunate acronym. And Alex in particular has a longer history on the committee than I do, so there may be some questions that they can help with. Just a few things to very quickly point out. First of all, this is an executive summary you got, so there's a lot more paperwork we're eventually going to inundate you with. And actually, if you just skip ahead to what I think shows up on the second page here, the process and timetable, what we were hoping to do with the Senate's agreement is to, in time for careful review before the first Senate meeting of next academic year, is to provide you with a much more detailed report, which will do things like give you more detailed discussions of how the new attributes would be considered, what we would look for in courses that would get an A or a D or an E or a C, and also, among other things, some alternative scenarios of how students might, pursuing a particular major, might be able to satisfy all these requirements and still graduate while they're still relatively young. Having said that, let me just quickly point out a few things and then I guess open it up. The process has been going on for a long time. I guess the last major milestone was 2 years ago when the LEAP-inspired learning outcomes were passed. And this could be the next milestone. It's been a real challenge. What we have here, and I just mentioned this very briefly in the executive summary, is trying to create a set of requirements that speak to two different philosophical approaches to general education. One, a more traditional one, is laid out by the Board of Regents requirements, which is based on the operative assumption that if students take a certain amount of credits in certain disciplinary areas, they will have the kind of breadth that's expected from a baccalaureate education. Then there are the LEAP-inspired outcomes, which we modified a bit and the Faculty Senate passed, which look at it differently, not in a necessarily mutually exclusive way, but in a way that emphasizes integration and application of a broad body of knowledge. And those, I don't want to rehash those debates because I'm sure that was the heart of the discussion 2 years ago. But there's the challenge. Plus, when you start to look at what Board of Regents requires in terms of, say, certain amount of credits in natural sciences, social science, humanities, what passes muster for a Board of Regents general education requirement, and what, say, for example, would get an S or an H or an N designator for the UF catalog, can be two significantly different things. So it starts to look extremely complicated and extremely challenging. But I think what we can come up with is something that will be the result of a very complicated and challenging process, but will eventually present itself to students as something that's comprehensible and quite doable. Speaking of which, then, the other thing to point out here is under the heading of UF Faculty Senate Learning Outcomes and Possible Course/Credit Requirements, this is probably this kind of OMG section of the document. You add these numbers up, and students will be here forever. We've added a great additional burden, and that's what the last section with the Q&A tries to address. That the focus, the approach should be to try and find as many ways to continue to satisfy BOR general education requirements by adding these new attributes onto existing courses, encouraging programs, departments, colleges to tweak existing courses, develop new courses that can do double duty, and the problem of additional credit should not exist. And one thing we've been very cognizant of, and one of the probably the only really high-profile activity that GERC carried out over the last year was the faculty survey in the fall, and one very clear message was keep it within the existing 39 credits that the core requires, and if at all possible, get it down to the Board of Regents required 34 credit minimum. And we have discussed in the Q&A some ways in which this can be done, and in the bigger document that you'll get some possible scenarios on exactly how that might happen. And then beyond that, here's where we are now and why we're here at this point is that we really want to make this a very deliberative participatory process, bringing it to the faculty at each important decision point. Not presupposing anything. We tried very hard in GERC to, we couldn't help talk about, anticipate, but not get involved in the turf battles that are bound to happen and what's going to happen to my enrollments in my department, my college, my program. That's something that the faculty need to work out or help us work out.
Jonathan, thank you very much. And as he said, this is a report. This is not something the faculty are being asked to vote on at this point. Are there any questions or comments on this? Rainer.
Jonathan, would you mind adding an item number 5? Titled Assessment. So this is on page 2 where process and timetable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
An item number 5 called Assessment.
Adding an item number 5, okay.
Adding an item number 5.
Would you
okay.
mind please doing so?
Sure.
That'll sort of keep it in the limelight, as it were.
Good. Good. Yeah, and that brings up an important point. You know, we are, of course, under pressure, not just from the provost, to have an accessible general education set of general education requirements, and we seem to, from time to time, assess courses for the core curriculum, but the possibility of assessing the impact of the entire curriculum has really eluded us, and that is one of the underlying goals of the changes we're proposing.
Cecile?
I think, you know, any change is going to elicit those kinds of reactions you were talking about, and maybe it's part of human nature. But I'm very excited about the opportunities that are inherent in this approach, because I think it really does allow departments to attract students in different ways, in multiple ways, rather than, you know, having one core class or something. So I'm really looking forward to what you guys come up with.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right, we are, David.
Just a quick question. Have you had any interactions with units about how this might work with them?
No, not yet. Oh. And that's where the fun begins.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is a conversation, or if you prefer, an argument starter. And it'll be a good one. But we didn't want to presuppose anything. We really want substantive feedback on how this whole thing will be fleshed out and operationalized in terms of exactly how you determine what will take for a course to get a new attribute, what courses. Those have to come ground up. That can't be imposed by the committee.
All right. Thank you. Let's move on. Thank you. Are there any public comments and questions? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Sina Anahita. I'm a associate professor in sociology, and I'm the coordinator of Women's and Gender Studies and the associate director of Northern Studies. And I'm here to notify Faculty Senate of what I think are very serious sexual harassment events that are going on in the Sun Star. And under Title IX, which Eric Madsen pointed out that the public comment section is actually number 9, so I think that this is a good portent. Under Title IX, sexual harassment is forbidden at a university. And I just want to tell you a little bit about what the Sun Star has been doing. In the April 2nd version of the Sun Star, they had a spoof that had a picture of a woman's legs and stirrups with her vagina, her genitals being a building. And then there was a play on mocking women's genitals in the title of the article. And then a named staff member in the article who was purported, it was a fake quote where she was talking about men's genitals. This is clearly sexual harassment. In the most recent version, April 23rd, they were analyzing the site UAF Confessions, which is a non-UAF-affiliated Facebook page where students can post all kinds of stuff, and what some of the stuff that was posted was about musing about students' sex lives. And the Sun Star reprinted screenshots with the names of the students intact. So one of the graduate students in one of the departments of the College of Liberal Arts is named with using the F word in relationship to her. There was another student who was named, who was called a fag. There was another post where an anonymous person said, I think my roommate is pregnant, and then a named student responded saying, this is printed in the Sun Star, punch her in the stomach, she'll thank you later. So these are instances of a failure of leadership for the Sun Star. Under Title IX, once the university is made aware of the fact that there is sexual harassment going on, which includes a hostile environment for women students, that the university must take action. And so I'm urging us to do that. Thank you.
Does anyone wish to ask questions or comment on this at this time?
We don't get Sun Star in Daily Mail, so I'm not familiar with the issue, or I'm not familiar other than just what's been presented to us. But what is the action that that Senna's requesting?
The federal law, Title IX, requires that the university prohibit sexual harassment, and once it learns of an incident of sexual harassment that is either severe or pervasive, it must take steps immediately to end the harassment and to effectively manage the situation. I filed a complaint of sexual harassment with the director of the DNEO 3 weeks ago, and she declined to investigate upon advice from general counsel that the Sunstar enjoys unlimited First Amendment rights. So under a system of shared governance, which is what we have at UAF, now I'm turning to the faculty and saying, let's step up to the plate. This is sexual harassment of our students, sexual harassment of our faculty members and our staff, and most importantly, our students, and that we should do something about it.
Todd?
Have any of the students that were in this publication made any complaints or filed any grievances?
Not that I know of, but under Title IX, a person does not have to file a complaint that if the hostile environment exists, the university must act, even in the absence of a complaint.
Jane?
Sina, what would you have us do? Or can you give some suggestions?
I think education of key administrators on the Title IX, what Title IX requires us to do. And I don't know, faculty senate discussion about that issue about Title IX and ending sexual harassment.
All right, thank you. We will move on. We take this information under advisement. Thank you, Sina.
Thank you.
The next item, are there any other public comments and questions? All right, the next item is governance reports. Is there someone here from staff council? No. ASUAF? UNAC? Debu, would you like to comment?
Thank you. I have four comments. I'll try to limit it quick, to quick ones. The first one is that I'm very supportive of shared governance, and I'm not saying this body is not in, not doing that effectively, but I just want to request everybody to uphold shared governance in the university, because it's very critical that faculty get involved and just not passed on a decision made by administration. So that will be the key to our well-being and success in the future. Second, and most important, I know that Jennifer will be honored with the recognition of service, but I would really like to bring this, that I have seen a new leadership in Faculty Senate with Jennifer, and I really appreciate that, we have worked she has reached out to faculty and to United Academics, and I the one thing that her open forums have brought more discussions. So I'm really going to applaud for this. Okay, so I will request everybody to join me. As always, UNAC is always prepared to coordinate with Faculty Senate in the future, and I'm looking forward to working with David Valentin as the incoming president. And I also hope that senators get more involved in decision-making processes. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Debu. I appreciate your kind remarks. And for UAFT, Jane, do you wish to say anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a couple of comments about the Joint Healthcare Committee. Just remind people that open enrollment ends May 15th for healthcare. And one thing that the committee's Joint Healthcare Committee is looking at is using salary bands to determine employee contribution of healthcare. And so we'll have more about that in the fall. We'll be meeting monthly during the summer as well.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jane.
Can you just say a little bit, what do you mean by that last?
The salary bands. there are many schools across the country that use, they break out the salary in different ways at each place, like $20,000. If you make under $20,000, you pay so much for health care. If you make $20,000 to $50,000, like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really a way to help support the very low paid people.
All right, thank you. And a report on athletics from Danny Shepard.
Hi, thank you, Jennifer. Over the past year, I've reported a lot about some of the academic accolades of our student athletes. I have some year-end reports as well as some on the athletic side. I did want to announce that the Chancellor did appoint me to another two-year term as a faculty athletic rep, so I will be finishing up my first term and starting my second two-year term, so I will continue in that role. I've also been appointed as the chair of the Great Northwest Athletic Conference FAR Council, the Faculty Athletic Rep Council, so I will chair that group at the conference level for the next 2 years. As I move into the summer, looking for some input on some of the initiatives that I'm pursuing, but if there are things that would help you that I can work with the student athletes on, that I can work with the coaches on, and that I can work with the athletic department as a whole on, the summer is a great time for me to develop my initiatives for the next year. So if you have some thoughts on what would be really, really helpful, word that I can get to students. I'm always working on developing workshops for our student athletes, so if you have some ideas on that, please get in touch with me. Your leadership, Jennifer and David, both know how to get hold of me if you can't find how to get that information to me. In terms of athletically, the hockey conference is moving from the CCHA to the WCHA. That will start new on July 1st, so we will be in a new conference starting July 1st. In terms of athletic accomplishments, very, very exciting. We have 10 teams here at UAF. 8 of those teams made it to postseason play this year. 6 of those teams made it to the national level. So we have student athletes competing at the national level. We did have a national champion this year in swimming, so that was very exciting. That was a first. And we have several teams that are ranked nationally. As well. Our men's basketball team beat the reigning national champions this year. That was very exciting. Another highlight of the men's basketball team is we had 3 players make it to the conference all-academic team, which was a first in a very long time. So that was a very exciting accomplishment for them. Some other highlights of awards, we got a conference rookie of the year in volleyball. We had the conference scholar athlete of the year in hockey, and we ended up with a conference coach of the year in men's basketball. So overall, a very, very exciting year, both academically and athletically, and I thank you all for your comments and support through the year.
Thank you, Danny. That's very good news, and I'm pleased to hear that you've been reappointed, and we'll see you again next year. Are there any questions for Danny? All right. Thank you very much. And now we move on to members' comments, questions, and announcements. And may I request, considering the time, that we limit this to anything that is not in the committee reports. Does anyone need to make an announcement that's not in the report? Seeing none, we'll move on to award presentations and announcements. And the first is the presentation of the Outstanding Senator of the Year Award. And David will handle this.
This is just fun. Every year, as you know, we honor one of our own for an outstanding performance of duties over the past year, above and beyond the call of duty. And this year, I was on the committee, and we had a tough decision to make, but we made it, and we're happy with the decision that we have. So let me read to you the resolution that leads up to this. Whereas Cynthia Hardy has served as an alternate senator for many years and was appointed to a full Senate seat in April 2012, and whereas Cindy Hardy has served on the Student Academic Development and Achievement Committee since 1993, and whereas Cindy Hardy has served as chair or co-chair of the SADA Committee since 1997, and whereas under her leadership, the SATA committee has actively worked to improve developmental education and students' long-term success. And whereas, Cindy Hardy served on the Curricular Affairs Committee, acting as a liaison with the SATA committee. And whereas, Cindy Hardy has consistently and actively contributed to the Faculty Senate Administrative Committee, providing valuable assistance to Senate leadership in handling matters both routine and extraordinary. And whereas, Cindy served as Senate liaison with the General Education Revitalization Committee, providing an important channel of communication between GERC and the Faculty Senate. And whereas Cindy engaged actively in GERC, including attending a Faculty Alliance General Education Workshop in Anchorage and agreeing to serve as a UAF representative on the Faculty Alliance JELO Committee, General Education Learning Outcomes Committee, and whereas Cindy consistently and strongly advocates for the best interests of our students, and whereas Cindy consistently is well prepared, takes a thoughtful and well-reasoned approach to issues under consideration, and maintains an open mind to new information, and whereas Cindy consistently sets an outstanding example of a committed senator, now, therefore, be it resolved that the UAF Faculty Senate recognizes Cindy Hardy as Outstanding Senator of the Year for academic year 2012 to 2013.
Cindy, thank you very much. And we will arrange for your prize as well, your airplane ticket. Yes. Don't forget. Oh, no. All right. And the next is the announcement of Usabelli Awards. This is attachment 22 in your agenda, and I've asked the provost to announce these.
I'm very pleased to announce the 2013 Usabelli Award winners in teaching, Dr. Jonathan Rosenberg, Professor, Political Science. Research, Dr. Jeffrey Freimuller, Professor of Geology and Geophysics. And in service, Dr. Catherine Cahill, Associate Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry, actually professor almost soon. Mm-hmm. So why don't you join me in congratulating those winners. I would also like to recognize the individuals who were nominated for these awards. That indicates respect from their colleagues, the community, and others that write these nominating letters. And I think that that's an important recognition as well. So the nominees in teaching were Charles Mason, Patricia Merritt, Joseph Thompson. The nominees in research were Sukumar Bandhopadhyay, David Mollett, Morris Palter, Roger Roos, Kenneth Sasson, and Katie Walter Anthony. And in service, nominees were Sukumar Bandhopadhyay, Raymond Roland, and Linda Tannehill. Recognition for those individuals as well.
And please note that there will be an award ceremony for the Usabelli Award winners this evening at the museum. 7 o'clock. You've been asked to RSVP, but I believe even if you didn't, you would be welcome.
Yes, so Senate members are welcome and are encouraged to attend. We also have a number of recipients of emeritus status for 2013. This is the highest award that the university can provide to a retiring faculty member. We have individuals from virtually all of the schools and colleges that have been promoted to that status. Read quickly the group, which is Carol Barnhart, Associate Professor of Education, Raymond Barnhart, Professor of Cross-Cultural Studies, Charles Crapo, Professor of Seafood Science, Joel Irish, Professor of Anthropology, Zygmunt Kowalik, Professor of Oceanography, Jonah Lee, Professor of Mechanical Engineering, Carol Lewis, who is Dean Emeritus of the School of Natural Resources and Agricultural Sciences, as well as Emeritus Professor of Resource Management, Roman Matika, Research Professor Emeritus, Peter Schweitzer, Professor of Anthropology Emeritus, Jan Stitt, Creative Director of Marketing and Communications Emerita, Peter Stortz, Professor of Extension Emeritus, and Daniel Walsh, Professor of Mineral Preparation Engineering Emeritus. Yep, recognize those individuals as well.
Thank you, Provost Henricks. And now we move on to recognition of Senate service. And in this, we would like to recognize individuals for extra Senate service. These are mainly the committee chairs, but you will see as we go through this. And I ask you to hold your applause because we have a number of them to do and we are running late. But please join me in your thoughts, recognizing these as we present them. There are some people who are not in the room, but we will announce their names and then send the acknowledgments to them after the meeting. The first is Latrice Bowman for Core Review. She has served as the chair of Core Review for 6 or 8 years. I'm not entirely sure how many, but she's been on that committee for 10 years, and we're very grateful for her handling this committee so well for so long. The next is Donnie Brethart, who has been the chair of the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee, chair of GAC this year. Donnie, please. John Dean, who I believe is out of town, he served this year as the chair of the Research Advisory Committee. As you know, he's had a long Senate service, and we're very glad that he's applying his experience to this committee, and we will send that to him. Cindy Hardy, who was the chair of the STATA committee this year, please come up. Karen Jensen, who chaired unit criteria for us and handled both unit criteria and work on the updating the Blue Book, which will be an ongoing effort next year. But some very good progress was made this year. Thank you, Karen. Cecile Lardon, who was the chair of Faculty Affairs Committee. Faculty Affairs Committee, yes, Cecile, and she will be back next year as the president-elect of the Faculty Senate. Franz Meyer, who is the chair this year of FDAI, and you heard from him earlier on the big project they undertook on electronic course evaluations. Thank you, Franz. And Rainer Newberry, we have two chairs here to acknowledge, the Curricular Affairs Committee and Curriculum Review. And Rainer, thank you very much. Jean Ritchie, who I don't believe is here, but she took on the chairmanship of the Core Review Committee mid-year when Latrice was not able to do it any longer, and so on very short notice she agreed to handle this, and we are really glad that she was able to do it for us. Jane Weber, who is the chair of the Committee on the Status of Women, and we appreciate her long experience with this committee. The committee has been doing some good work that affects much more than just the women, but also the men and the faculty standing for promotion and tenure at the university. Jonathan Rosenberg, who was the chair of GIRC, and you heard from him earlier. Is he still here? No, okay. We'll see him this evening at the Usabelli Awards, since he has just won the award for teaching. Craig Gerlach, who is also not here, but is the chair of the Interdisciplinary Issues Faculty Committee. This is the committee looking at institutional impediments, barriers, or disincentives to faculty and students working on interdisciplinary research and teaching. This is not intended as a criticism of the university, but an effort to identify ways that we can make interdisciplinary work easier and promote it. And they are doing a great job on this report. It's not yet finished, but you will see it soon. So that's for Craig Gerlach. He unfortunately is leaving UAF at the end of this semester. He's moving to University of Alberta?
Yeah,
I think so. That's right. So this is his goodbye work for the university. Debu Misra from UNAC, please come up, Debu. We very much appreciate your efforts to open lines of communication between the union and the Faculty Senate, and you've been here consistently and have been reporting to us on what the union is doing.
Thank you.
And Danny Shepherd. Are you here, Danny?
She left.
All right. So Dani Shepherd, and along the same vein, we appreciate her new effort in tying the athletics department and the academic issues in athletics to the Faculty Senate and making us much more aware of what's going on and how we can interact with them. So a hand for everyone who's put in all this effort during the year. These are letters of appreciation, and we are sending copies to their deans, directors, whoever else should know about
mothers.
Their personal, pardon, their mothers. I don't know, do you have their mothers' addresses? So thank you very much, everyone. And the next is, oh, dear, I'm handing this over to David.
I mentioned in my remarks my appreciation for Jennifer Reynolds' work, but I only really scratched the surface in those remarks. We have a formal recognition for Senate President Jennifer Reynolds as kind of our last interaction with her as President of the Senate. Whereas Jennifer Reynolds has served the UAF Faculty Senate for 10 years in a manner deserving of the UAF Faculty Senate's highest admiration and respect, and whereas Jennifer worked tirelessly to promote participation by UAF faculty in shared governance of the university, and whereas Jennifer served as senator to the UAF Faculty Senate from 2003 to 2005, as an alternate from 2006 to 2008, and again as senator from 2008 to 2009 through to 2010 to 2011, and whereas Jennifer served on the Graduate Academic and Advisory Committee as a member in 2003-2004 and 2004-2005, and whereas Jennifer served as chair of the Faculty Affairs Committee from 2009 to 2010 and 2010 to 2011, and whereas Jennifer served on the Faculty Senate Administrative Committee as a member from 2009 to 2010 through 2010 to 2011, this is a tongue twister, and served as chair in 2011 to 2012, and whereas Jennifer served as a member of the UAF Governance Coordinating Committee from 2011 to 2012 through 2012 to 2013, and whereas Jennifer served as president-elect of the UAF Faculty Senate in 2011 to 2012, and whereas Jennifer served as president of the UAF Faculty Senate in 2012 to 2013, bringing exceptional leadership, unflagging energy, persevering dedication, and absolute commitment to the work, and whereas Jennifer Reynolds effectively advocated for UAF faculty and programs as a member of the UA Faculty Alliance from 2010 to 2011 through 2012 to 2013, notably with her work on the eLab Task Force, and whereas Jennifer worked strategically and effectively on behalf of UAF faculty on the UAF Planning and Budget Committee from 2010 to 2011 through 2012 to 2013, and whereas as a direct result of Jennifer's leadership, the Faculty Senate has made excellent progress on a variety of issues and has had substantial positive impacts on UAF, and whereas the UAF Faculty Senate wishes to acknowledge the truly outstanding service rendered the faculty and the university by the work of Jennifer Reynolds as she concludes her term as president. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the UAF Faculty Senate acknowledges the many contributions of Jennifer Reynolds and express its appreciation for her exemplary service.
Thank you all, and I'm very confident handing this over to David Valentine and Cecile Lardon. I think next year is going to be just great in the Senate. It will be very productive. And I appreciate all the work that people have put in this year. I know you don't always get recognized, but it does matter. All right, thank you very much. And with that, we will adjourn this Senate, but before I do so, reminder that the new Senate is going to convene immediately and has, sorry? Yep, up. What?
Don't hit the hammer yet, okay?
All right, we are still in session.
Okay, so I'm upset about the comments that Sina made and our lack of response to them. I think we ought to do something. And I'd like to, I know this is out of order, blah, blah, woof, woof. go ahead and throw me out.
No, go on.
I want to offer a resolution. We resolve that the Administrative Committee of the Faculty Senate address incidents of sexual harassment at UAF as exemplified by recent issues of the UAF Sunstar. directs essentially the administrative committee to at least look into doing something over the summer, as opposed to simply putting this off until the fall and God knows what will happen until then.
Okay, there's a resolution offered. Is there discussion on this?
At the risk of going 1 second longer, I think that's a great idea. I kind of peeked at it online, and it was worse than I thought. So I think doing something about it would be really a good idea, and this seems appropriate.
Anyone else? Cecile.
I'm not opposed to doing something. I'm not sure what the admin committee...
I don't either, but it has to have some leadership here, right? Yeah. And we'd like the faculty senate would like the administrative committee to provide some leadership into at least looking into what we can do.
Yeah, I'm in the dark in terms of knowing what happened, but I certainly have no problem with investigating a complaint.
Okay, Rainer, would you please reread the section that says what the administrative committee is asked to do?
Address incidents of sexual harassment at UAF as exemplified by recent issues of the UAF Sunstar. Okay, keyword here is address. Okay.
Any other discussion?
I think even some kind of vague response to this would be better than no response. So I think this would be a positive step.
All right, let's vote on this we need a second. Does anyone want a second?
Second.
All right, good. Let's vote on this. All in favor of this resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The resolution carries unanimously. Thank you, Rainer. All right, are there any other items before I gavel out this session? We are adjourned.
please stick around if you're on next year's Senate.
Yes, so all those on next year's Senate, 5-minute break to gather your thoughts, and then David will reconvene the new Senate.
PRC. It's another one.
Yeah.
Oh no, we can't talk about
that. I'm going to send back to the room.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Are they already? Okay, and we'll have to do that.
And if it looks like we're not paying attention, then this is the first time I've heard of it.
You mean it's never so that people are
like,
a really good idea. Can you whip one out?
I did.
Good
Nice to meet you. I'm Amy. I didn't get my name tag yet.
Amy.
Pleased to meet you.
Thank you.
Okay. Please share the microphone with two chairs on your right. Awesome. Okay.
So I'm not allowed to use that one, huh?
Okay.
You gonna stop me?
Georgina, hi there. I'm
Hi.
Jude Keelan from biology.
Hi. From biology, I'm from my art.
All right.
Nice to meet you. So you're in Arctic Health? Is that where you're based?
Yeah, we're in Arctic Biology.
Okay. I was the alternate last year, so I came a couple of times. But yeah, and I've sat back a few times.
So the April 6th issue that was so.
Too much. It's kind of interesting learning a little more about the university.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, oh, no wonder any of this stuff. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting in that regard.
Yeah.
The inner workings. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of nice getting to know some of the other folks that sort of. That are also interested in these kinds of things. Getting a shock.
I got April 2nd, April 4th.
Are you anthropologist?
No, political science?
Political science.
Yeah.
Were you the lady that was in
like
the conference that you had?
I ended up in the hospital.
Did everything go okay?
It did. I have a wonderful 3 month old now.
Oh, good.
But I had to cancel that. I had a speaking engagement at the Alfred Wegener Institute in Germany. Everything got shut down.
Okay, that's right. Because I'm the secretariat for art, and so I was sending you.
Yeah,
the one sending
Bettina.
You.
Okay.
How do I know her name?
I didn't realize you were faculty.
Research faculty.
Okay,
in
IR.
Yeah. So I did my PhD at the School of Creation years ago, and then I sort of did a postdoc with Teaching Computing, and then faculty at IR.
So in Fishing
It's in marine ecosystem modeling.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of, so art, IR, actually,
they wanted the administrative support, and so Larry just basically sent it off.
No, I felt so bad. You know, it's one of those things where, well, obviously, it's nothing I can do.
No, everyone was just like, oh my gosh, I knew this.
But it did. It
was methodical. Tend to try to be methodical.
So my mother and
wonderful.
Yeah.
Not wonderful.
No, it is. But you know what I'm just saying? Like,
yes.
It was and it wasn't. Of course, it's, no one could sit on you like your mother.
Right.
But, you know, in hindsight, it was like, what a horrible opportunity. What a wonderful opportunity.
Right.
Right. Right. Like,
yeah.
You have that connection.
Yeah.
And so then,
early.
Right.
Early.
Randomly around my due date.
You
did. Am I live now? Yes. Could everybody please take a seat? The 2013-2014 Faculty Senate is now in session. Jane, would you call the roll for the 2013-2014 members?
Okay, and just for the record, it looks like we do have a quorum. Albertson. Barnes. Berge, Bret Hart, C, Chambers, Chen, Kaufman,
here.
Cook,
here.
Condi. Hey. Utter was here for Condi. Davis. Dean. Duke.
Here.
Fallon.
Here.
Focesato. Gibson.
Here.
Gustafson. Hahn. Hardy, Sarah.
She had to leave.
Okay. Healy. Like she had to leave too. Horstman. Johnson.
Here.
Johnston.
Also had to leave, I guess.
Jolie. Keeland.
Here.
I heard it here. Okay. Larden.
Here.
Lovecraft.
Present.
Marr. He was here.
He was here earlier.
McCartney.
Here.
Myers.
Here.
Misra.
Here.
Moser.
Here.
Newberry.
Here.
Bradenbow.
Present.
Shawcross.
Here.
Okay. Short.
Well, here, not there.
Gotcha. Valentine.
Here.
Weber. Here. Webley. Windsor. Yari.
Here.
Jane.
Thank you, Jane. Many of you are returning Senate members, and I appreciate the fact that you're coming back. To those of you who are newly elected, thank you for being willing to serve on the Senate. It's an important job. I think that what we do is worthwhile, and I guarantee that if you put some effort into it, you'll think much the same. So thank you very much for being willing to serve. The first thing I wanted to mention is that the UAF Faculty Senate, in case you don't know, has its website at uaf.edu/uafgov/faculty-senate. So that is where agendas will be posted, that's where minutes will be posted, and as well as a sort of a portal to a lot of important documents that you will find useful to your Senate work. Again, primarily for those of you who are new to the Faculty Senate, the committees of the Faculty Senate are really where most of the work of the Faculty Senate gets done. And each senator will be on one committee, generally speaking. And that's where we really need your help the most. These monthly meetings that we have here is primarily to ratify the work that those committees do. So I urge you to put some time and energy into those. The conveners of the committees will be notified soon who they are. The chairs of the committees will be notified soon who they are. And they will be convening the committees during early in the fall to begin their work. After the conveners do that, each of the committees will be asked to elect a chair. I was asked at the very beginning of the meeting to announce that Mike Davis has some budget information. Given the time, I'm going to ask that if you are interested in looking at some of the Alaska State budget information that he has, that you meet with him after the Senate meeting has concluded. Any questions? Okay. We'll move now to the remarks of President-elect Cecile Larden.
I have to say, it feels a lot safer sitting over there somewhere. Even though you kind of see the same faces, it is a different perspective. Over this past semester, as I've sort of been thinking about whether I want to take on this role or not, I've been paying a lot more attention to what David and Jennifer have been doing, and really have come to really appreciate the complexity of not only of being a senator, if you take it seriously, but of taking on a leadership role, either as a committee chair or in this role. So my appreciation and wonderment about this has definitely grown. I think I'm at this point going into it with my eyes as open as I can get them without
becoming too afraid of what's coming at me. But I'm really excited about it. I think there are a lot of opportunities next year for what the Senate can do. There are a lot of challenges coming at us, and so I really hope that we can be thoughtful and as David has mentioned, take our committee work seriously and be informed organizational citizens making smart decisions about our present and in our future. And I'm really looking forward to working together with all of you.
Any questions for Cecile? Okay, I'm going to go just slightly out of order because I forgot a very important item that's on my notes but I skipped over, and that is you probably have noticed that there's a woman to our right, Jane Harvey. Jane does an amazing amount of work for this. She is what makes the Senate actually function like a well-functioning body, and I really, really appreciate the work that she does. Please, 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 if you ever get an email from Jane Harvey, open it and read it. And you will be getting emails from Jane Harvey. That's not if, it's when. Okay. Okay, moving along. We have Provost Susan Henricks with us, and she has some remarks for us.
Well, first of all, I'll excuse myself because I'm going to speak and run as I have another meeting that started about a half hour ago that I need to attend. But I also would like to welcome all of the new senators and re-welcome all of the continuing senators to the Faculty Senate. I very much appreciate all of the work that faculty senators do. All of you, but particularly new President David Valentine and President-elect Cecile Lardon. Their roles are very important and very time-consuming, and I appreciate that they are willing to spend that time. There are two issues, at least, that the Senate will be working on next year that are very close to my heart in terms of things that I think are vital for the university to work on and to find a resolution to. And the first is, of course, the revitalization of the general education requirements, now more than 25 years old from their original implementation. So I think that the time is ripe to make some changes to adapt these to changing conditions in the nation, the world, and particularly in universities, of course. But I do want this to be a set of general education requirements that will stand us in good stead the way the old core curriculum has stood us in good stead for many, many years. And so I'm not urging a thoughtless rush to a solution, but a thoughtful and productive progress toward a resolution that I recognize will take some time. I also am very interested in the outcomes that were discussed today, preliminary outcomes of the assessments of course evaluation, student assessment of instruction. That's, I think, a very important component of the evaluation of faculty, and it also is a very important source of feedback to faculty to enable them to improve their instruction. I think both parts of that function of student assessment are important, and I hope we can find an instrument or instruments that help us to do that very well. So thanks again for all your work, and I look forward to a productive working relationship with the Faculty Senate over the next academic year.
Thank you, Provost Henricks. Any questions for Provost? Okay. We have a very short agenda of new business, which is pretty standard. However, it's just come to my attention that we omitted a discussion item. There is a request for Faculty Senate representative for a new bookstore advisory council, which Jennifer Reynolds has been taking lead on. I'm going to read you a brief statement about this. The Bookstore Advisory Council serves as an official committee to review and recommend bookstore operating policies and procedures and to provide guidance to both the bookstore and the institution on bookstore matters. The council should be composed of members of the university administration, faculty, staff, and student body. The bookstore manager and regional manager may serve as full or ad hoc council members. The council should solicit information from administrators, faculty, staff, and students for discussion during committee meetings and then report back resolutions. The council should meet on a regular basis, preferably monthly, to review concerns of both the institution and the bookstore. An agenda should be prepared and distributed in advance for committee members to review. So So that's essentially the overview. The sort of the even bigger overview is that this is largely in the wake of some missteps that were taken in the past few years concerning the existence and then the non-existence and then the existence again of a bookstore here on campus. And so the idea essentially is to have a council that operates to essentially guide the direction of the bookstore. And they're looking for representatives, faculty representatives from the Senate to be part of this. So I encourage you, if you're interested in it, to volunteer. Jennifer, do you have anything to add to that? Okay. Any comments, questions? Okay, now we'll move back to our actual agenda. There's essentially three things that we need to go through. The first is the motion to approve the 2013-2014 UAF Faculty Senate meeting calendar, which is submitted by the Administrative Committee. It's attachment number 191/24. Essentially, that's going to be next year's Faculty Senate calendar. And I would welcome a motion to adopt that calendar.
So moved.
Second. All right. Moved and seconded. Discussion. Okay. Hearing none. Are there any objections to the calendar? Seeing none, the calendar is adopted. Motion B, or item B, motion to authorize the Administrative Committee to act on behalf of the Senate during the summer months, submitted by the Administrative Committee. And it sounds like that's the attachment 191/25. It sounds like a naked power grab by the power elite of the Faculty Senate. However, the idea is that while faculty are off contract during the summer, this body, the Administrative Committee, will act as the proxy for the Senate in anything that comes up. Generally speaking, very little does come up. This year, though, we have just resolved that we will be undertaking some activity during the summer to look into the sexual harassment issues at the Sun Star. Do I have a motion for authorizing? Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All right. Any discussion? Okay. Any objections to this authorization? Seeing none, motion's adopted. And finally, I made reference in my remarks about the existence of these committees. These committee compositions are mostly done. Some of the people that we need to talk to before we can finalize the committee are out of town and so far have been unreachable. So you'll be hearing us from us by email concerning committee assignments and conveners. That should be before everyone is off contract, so you'll be getting communication from that. In fact, Cecile and I will be working on that directly after this meeting. Okay, any other comments or questions? Yes, Debbie.
Just a quick comment that I will be wearing two hats in this next Senate. So if there is no conflict of interest, I'll continue. But if there is a conflict of interest, then I'll request somebody else to be a representative of UNAC. So I'm just kind of making a comment here.
Sure, and I would imagine that would be the case for UNAC as well.
Sorry?
I would imagine you're concerned about conflicts of interest. That would be on
UNAC
both bodies.
Versus
right.
Faculty Senate.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Seeing none, the first Senate meeting of the 2013 to 2014 UF Faculty Senate is adjourned. See you next fall.